He would have also sent his messengers and prophets, and they would have pointed out to mankind the domain and glory of this second God, and you would have also seen them. But no such incident ever took place. He is one Allah whom we should all recognize and worship.
Now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I would like to take this opportunity to talk about one dimension of the personality of Amir al-Mu'mineen, and that is the universal aspect of his personality. After the events of Saqifa, when Abu Sufyan came to Ali, he said, "I know it's your right." So even Abu Sufyan knew about it. There was nothing implicit. It was very, very explicit. If he knew, everybody else knew about it. And he says, you know, if you agree, I can fill the streets of Medina with horsemen and fighters for your cause. It was his right. But he said, no, I don't want your support. Because he knew that this person is a munafiq. He has his own motivations. He wanted to take advantage of the situation for his own, you know, motives. And so he refused. So the issue is not that you might have a right goal and then you can reach to it by any means that you want. No. The goal has to be legit, and even the means to that goal has to be legitimate. This is as far as Namla is concerned. Ali is not willing to compromise even when it comes to a small ant. And then he says to Ash'as bin Qais, "Inna dunyakum 'indi la ahwanu min waraqatin fi fami jaradatin taqdamuha." He says to, you know, Ash'as bin Qais, he says, "To me, your dunya is less than value compared to the leaf which is in the mouth of a locust. It's not worth. And I'm not going to, you know, compromise my principles because of your own wrong motives." When it comes to even human beings, Amir al-Mu'mineen doesn't distinguish between Muslim and non-Muslim when it comes to justice and fairness. And this is something very clear in the Quran. How far we have moved away as a Muslim ummah from those teachings and values. It's really surprising. How can Muslims call themselves Muslims when we have just this kind of teachings and values in the Quran, in the Sunnah of the Prophet, the Seerah of the Prophet, and the example of Amir al-Mu'mineen? When he sent Malik Ashtar to Egypt, it's interesting that, you know, Egypt at that time was a multi-faith community. There were Christians as well as Muslims under Muslim rule. And look at the epistle or the document that Ali wrote about governance and gave to Malik Ashtar. Unfortunately, Malik Ashtar was not able to reach there. People of Muawiyah killed him in the way. But if you look at that document which has survived, where he says to Malik Ashtar, وَعَشْئِرْ قَلْبَكَ الرَّحْمَ لِلْرَعِيَّ وَالْمُحَبَّ لَهُمْ وَاللُّطْفُ بِهِمْ. He says, "Ash'ir" means, you know, what we call تحت الشعور. Imbibe, make it a second nature in your heart to have mercy for your subjects and love for them and to be kind to them. وَلَا تَكُونَنَّ عَلَيْهِمْ سَبُعًا ظَارِعًا تَخْتَنِمُ عَقْلُهُمْ. Do not be like that animal which is waiting in ambush for its, you know, target to go and eat it whenever the opportunity is there. Why? Why have rahmah and muhabba and lutf to your subjects? فَإِنَّهُ صِنْفَانِ إِنَّهُمْ صِنْفَانِ Because they are of two kinds only. إِمَّا أَخٌ لَكَ فِي الدِّينِ Either they are your brother and in faith, أو نَظِيرٌ لَكَ فِي الْخَلْقِ Or they are like you in humanity, in appearance. When you look at that statement, and this is when we say Ali is a universal personality, not bound by time and space, look at the situation in Egypt now. Look at the strife among the Muslims themselves. Look at the tension between especially the extremist Salafis and the Coptic Christians who are a minority there. Ali, centuries ago, wrote to Malik Ashtar that there is a non-Muslim minority there. Remember, have sense of rahma and muhabba and lutf towards all of them, whether they are in brethren in faith or like you in humanity. Centuries have passed. But even now, the churches of Coptic Christians in Egypt are being burned. For what? Which law in the Sharia allows Muslims to do that? Look at the Salafis, how they have treated the Shia minority there, which is even a smaller minority than the Coptic Christians there. The way they incite people against the Shias, the way they use the labels against the Shias, the Salafis.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
In the limelight.
The death of Queen Elizabeth has raised much discussion about independence of Commonwealth realms. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media for further details. Stay tuned for the second part. Al Jazeera English wrote this headline saying, Queen's death accelerates ex-colonies' push to ditch UK crown. According to Al Jazeera English, removing the British monarch as head of state would complete decolonization process, Jamaican academic says. The death of Queen Elizabeth will accelerate the push by former UK colonies to ditch the British crown, experts and advocates have said amid heightened anti-colonial sentiments in the remaining Commonwealth realms. Despite the collapse of the British Empire in the last century, 14 countries have kept the monarch as their head of state after gaining independence. But with King Charles ascending to the throne after the death of his mother recently, several nations are expected to break ties with Buckingham Palace in the years to come and move towards the full republican system that does not recognize the monarch. There was already stirrings of republicanism in a number of these different countries, but as long as the Queen was alive, there was that sentimental attachment to her person, not to this institution, but to the Queen herself, said Brooke Newman, an associate professor of history at Virginia Commonwealth. Now that she is gone, there is much less of a sentimental attachment to the institution of the monarchy, and then even less so to the person of Charles. The Commonwealth realms include several Caribbean nations where republicanism is gaining momentum, as well as Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Papua New Guinea, and a few island nations in the Pacific. While the Prime Minister of New Zealand has ruled out the possibility of a divorce from the Crown in the foreseeable future, in the Caribbean it is a different story. Last November, Barbados renounced the Crown and became a republic. prompting similar conversations in other countries in the region. And since the Queen's death, the Prime Minister of nearby Antigua and Barbuda, an island country of nearly 100,000 people, announced plans to hold a referendum on keeping King Charles as head of state. Newman said the Crown's Commonwealth realm will shrink significantly in the coming decades. It's going to be happening during the reign of Charles. If he lives for another 20 to 25 years, I'll be very surprised if there are a large number of Commonwealth realms by the time his son takes the throne, she told Al Jazeera. NBC News also wrote, in recent years, former British colonies, especially countries where black residents were enslaved by their colonial masters, have been demanding accountability from the royal family, which became fabulously rich on the backs of slaves. So while there have been tributes to the Queen throughout the Commonwealth, hundreds gathered in an Anglican cathedral in the Ugandan capital of Kampala for a service honoring Elizabeth, there has been simmering discontent too. In March, the now heir to the throne, Prince William, his wife Kate, Prince Edward, and the Countess of Wessex were met with demonstrations and demands for reparations for slavery while on a royal tour to the Caribbean that took them to former colonies Jamaica, Belize, as well as the Bahamas. Many residents were especially incensed that their countries were helping pay for the royal tour. Why are we footing the bill for the benefit of a regime whose rise to greatness was fueled by extinction, enslavement, colonization, and degradation of people of this land? Bahama National Reparations Committee declared in an open letter, adding, why are we being made to pay again? According to CBS News, in Australia, a Commonwealth country where many revered Queen Elizabeth, newly elected Prime Minister Anthony Albanese government has already raised the possibility of holding a referendum to jettison Charles and the monarchy became a republic. The same goes for Canada, where the support for having a foreigner as head of state has also been eroding. I prefer someone from Windsor than the House of Windsor to be head of state, Flavio Volk, president of Canada's Automotive Parts Manufacturers Association, told Reuters after Elizabeth died. Guardian had this headline saying, "Can the Commonwealth survive the death of the Queen?" Guardian wrote, the Queen's death has been marked throughout the Commonwealth with a period of official mourning, but not far below the surface lies a simmering anger among those grappling with the legacy of colonialism. Some Commonwealth countries are already taking action. After Barbados became a republic last year, Jamaica is promising its own referendum. In the streets and on online message boards, there was anger at a legacy many Kenyans see as brutal and filled with atrocities that have never been properly investigated.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed, smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim. Din al-Islam, dini, wal-Arab, ghayru dini, Muhammad illi hadini.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. Going to talk about some of the Islamic laws about medical issues and conditions according to Ayatollah Khamenei. But before that, let's take a listen to a short biography and we'll be back. Don't go away.
A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtada Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, we testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up till 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching. One can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh Javid. Welcome to the program again.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome. We promised before the break, in fact,
to talk about some of the medical issues and circumstances. According to the supreme leader of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei, let me start off this episode with this question, Sheikh Javid. Is it permissible to remove the life support from the life support machine that is actually connected to a terminally ill patient, right? The patient's heart beats, but he's brain dead. So is it permissible to remove the life support from this patient, although, you know, his heart is still pumping, mm-hmm. right, and beating, but he's brain dead?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, according to all religious authorities, it's not permissible to remove the life support machine, which is called resuscitator, or maybe
yes.
It is a kind of machine that keeps the patient alive. Okay, the patient's heart beats, as you said, but he is brain dead. And a brain dead individual is in fact considered to be alive, and therefore it is necessary to keep the support machine connected to him as long as his heart is beating. And therefore, if a person happens to do this and to remove it, or gives his consent to remove the life support machine, and actually he is considered to have committed a kind of murder, you know. And of course, he has to pay the blood money if he does so, if he takes such an action. And therefore, it is not permissible for him to give his consent, as the heir as the heir of the patient. He should not give his consent to the doctor to remove the support machine, though it might be very costly, because keeping a patient who is going to die sooner rather than later, it's going to be very costly for him. But of course, one has to do whatever he can afford and whatever he can do to keep the patient alive, a terminally ill patient alive.
Mm-hmm, I see. Okay, Sheikh Javid, another question quite related to the issue and to the patient situation and circumstances. In cases where a sick person, a patient, is medically incurable,
sure.
All right?
Yeah.
And normally that is the case with those people who are like with incurable diseases. They normally have to suffer a lot from the pain that comes with the territory of each and every disease, you know?
Yeah.
So if that is the case, that the patient is enduring a severe pain until their death, when the death comes, can they be, or can they ask the doctors to anesthetize them, you know, with their own consent, of course, right?
Yeah.
Until their death, so that they don't feel so much pain. Obviously, we are not talking about mercy killing.
Yes.
All right? That's a different issue, which is related to, you know, a kind of self-destruction, right?
Mm.
But I'm asking about the anesthetization, you know, with the consent of the patient, so that they don't feel so much pain.
As you rightly mentioned, mercy killing is strictly forbidden. And you don't, and we don't mean to say that
euthanasia.
We don't believe, and we don't, Islam, of course, do not consider it as a legal, as an allowable, as a permissible act.
Yes, that's suicide.
So, as for giving, let's say, an injection to a patient to reduce or to decrease his sensation of pain, okay? And that's something we are now actually trying to discuss, okay? And probably it's called, according to a scientific term, it's called anesthesia, yes?
Yes.
So anesthesia actually is allowed if it does not precipitate the death of a person, or it does not inflict any harm or any injury on the patient, and there would be no problem as long as there is no damage is caused to the patient. But if it precipitates his death, and brings about his death, of course, it's not permissible.
Mm-hmm. I see.
It's not permissible at all.
Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Let's take a short break for this program, Islamic Laws on Arab English Radio. Stay with us.
The followers of Ayatollah Khamenei can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khamenei's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio, with me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are talking about the medical conditions and issues and related Islamic laws, according to Ayatollah Khamenei, about them. Sheikh Javid, if a person is suffering from a fatal disease,
yeah,
and normally the doctors would say that this person is going to die, for example, in a short time period, right?
Yeah.
So is it permissible to remove some of the certain organs from this patient's body, yes, such as the heart, kidney, and so on and so forth, you know? Before he's dead, of course.
Yes.
While he's still alive. So that it can be transplanted in the body of another person or patient? Is it possible? Is it permissible to do so?
Well, to be short, according to Ayatollah Khamenei, it is not permissible to remove an organ from a living patient, and a very important organ, if it leads to his death, with or without his consent, because some patients might want to give his consent to let the doctors remove, or through a surgical process, one of his organ. But if removing that organ actually leads to his death, it amounts to a kind of murder. So it's not permissible.
Mm-hmm.
But if it is an organ that does not lead to his death, and if it is cut off or removed, there is no objection, provided that it is done with the person's permission and with the person's consent. For example, a patient has two kidneys, and if he gives or donates one mm-hmm. of his kidneys to another patient who badly needs it.
Right.
So, and he gives it with his own consent. Of course, there's no objection to him consenting or giving permission so that the doctors can remove it and transplant it to another patient who needs it for his survival.
Just to confirm with you, like, for example, this patient suffering from a fatal disease, can, you know, give the permission of his, for example, removal of his eyes, although it doesn't lead to his death, to be transplanted to another person?
Well, Islam is opposed to, you know, to mutilation of another person's body, dead or alive, okay?
Yes.
If you give consent and let the doctors remove one of your eyes, it will damage your image, and of course it mutilates you and it disfigures you.
Yes.
And of course a disfigured person in public has no place. He's not given respect. So whether he gives it for a very... Because that person, another person who needs that eye, he can live on without getting that eye transplanted.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not very urgent, and he should not take such an action. It's not permissible if it's considered to be a kind of mutilation or uh-huh. disfigurement of actually deformity of yes. that individual.
Okay. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. And thank you, my dear listeners, for listening to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. We leave you in Allah's care, so please keep us in your du'as and prayers too. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
رحمن رحيم منان كريم سلام عليم من جاء إلى
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. السلام علیکم و رحمت الله و برکاته.
و علیکم السلام.
This is Vita at your service.
Very happy to meet you here, Vita.
It's a nice pleasure.
This is Youth Station. We're having another episode.
Yeah, it is IRIB English Radio, and
yes,
we are at your service.
Have you ever dreamed of changing the world?
You know, I have a rule in my life. Be the change you want to see in the world. This is a common sentence that you will see in every biography, in social media.
Yeah, exactly.
Be the change you want to see in the world.
Exactly.
But no one will do that way. As you know, for example, we have a youth generation and we have elderly generation. In the youth generation, because of the passionate persona that they have and they grow in themselves, it's like, okay, I believe in myself. I think I'm perfect. And when you think you're perfect, you have kind of extra trust in yourself.
Extra
and you think
energy.
You can do, yeah, exactly. You can do anything. And even change the world. I don't say it's a bad thing at all, but
I think it's a hallucination.
Possible. Yeah, exactly. And it's because you're a young person.
Yeah.
If you grow older and you just taste the bitter parts of life, you will understand that, okay, I've changed myself and that's enough for me, for
exactly.
the whole life and for everyone.
Yeah.
And this is the point that when people grow older because of the bitter experiences that they had in their lives, for example, losing someone, I don't know, anything that make them sad, they're like, okay, I can't do anything about this situation, about this world, and this is like a flow which is impossible to go against it. So
yeah.
I'm trying to act like a normal person, normal being, and I will live my life. And that
so
goes
it,
on.
I guess it has a lot to do with your age.
Yeah.
When you're younger, you think, oh my God, I have the power to change the entire world. I could cross the boundaries. I could do this and that and blah, 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 blah. But when you get older, when but now everybody might think that we are aged.
Yeah. No.
We are old. We are just, we are wrinkled. We have too much of wrinkles in our face. But this is Youth Station.
Yeah,
we should not forget that we're talking about the youth. And okay, as a youth, I have to admit that, you know, I sometimes think that the age that you think you are, and it has been written in your identity card, is not going to be your real age.
Exactly.
Because sometimes you're 18, but you
are 38.
Yes.
Intellectually.
Exactly, intellectually. So I have to admit that when I was younger, I had so much of passions to do so many things.
For changing the world, you mean?
No, no, no.
Not much big.
I'm not the kind of person who dreams that big.
You know.
But but as I just got older, I think I turned into a much more lazy person that cannot even change herself, exactly. Much less the entire world and universe.
You know, the thing is, when you are young, you just don't accept your defects. You don't expect you are weak. I want to prove to the world that you are powerful. Mm-hmm. You have the strength to change anything.
And then life happens.
Yeah.
And then life comes in the
middle. What a beautiful sentence. Life happens, you know.
Yeah, life
because
happens.
Because we leave most of the time, but life that much doesn't happen to
exactly.
us.
Exactly.
Especially in young ages, in mm-hmm. a young generation. We cannot taste life. There are many factors that I don't want to talk about them because mm-hmm. our story is another story. But the thing is, I think if you want to be the change, really, and if you are somehow serious about this goal, you have to have a combination of the youth generation and elderly generation. It's like, okay, you have to first of all admit whatever you are. You have to understand that you have some defects, you have some weaknesses, and you have to do something for them. You have to change them. Let me give you an example. For example, you are a bad-tempered
person. So just
let's
make it clear, Bita. Mm-hmm. We're coming to the point that we admit that instead of changing the world, we have to start changing ourselves. Yeah. To start I remember that I heard a quote which was very beautiful. Be the change that you wish the world would bring to you. So this is exactly the point that we have to consider. But before we talk about it more and more, let's go for a short break. We'll have a sip of water.
And after we'll breathe,
and then we'll be back.
We're going to come back to our conversation.
So this is just a cliffhanger. Don't go anywhere.
This is IRIB English Radio. You are listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back to Youth Station. Here with Bita, we're talking about
a hot topic about something mm-hmm. which is really important. And I think most of you guys just think about this point, changing the world.
Yeah. We all once have been entangled in this thought that maybe we're going to change the world, but...
I wanted to give an example. It was a cliffhanger, if you remember it. You know, the thing is, for example, you are a bad-tempered person. Mm-hmm. You're someone just get irritated easily and something like that.
Yeah.
And you want all of the people around the world to be good-tempered, to be kind, to be mm-hmm. nice, to be something. You are not that person. And even if, for example, all the people around the world were good, but they just wanted to react your actions, they would act like bad-tempered because you are bad-tempered, you know? You cannot expect others to be someone else that you are not. You cannot be even you don't try to be.
Yeah, exactly. That's very true. So the wise men... usually start from themselves. We said it in previous part. And when they start from themselves, they would go through too much of hardships. Mm-hmm. You know, we say that Rome has not been built over one night. Mm-hmm. So it is not just like you are going to turn into miraculously, you're going to turn into an angel.
Yeah.
Just after one night of talking to yourself, having sort of a soliloquy with yourself. It's not going to happen that way. It's going to take a lot from your soul, you know?
Yeah.
You have to go and search too much. You have to know yourself. You have to start to recognize what are the problems that you're suffering from. Mm-hmm. So then little by little, you're going to work on them just step by step as mm-hmm. though you are curing yourself, you know? When I was younger, I had this dream that maybe I could be able to make a cure for all the sicknesses all around the world.
Nice one. This is one of my goals.
But, you know, it's something that would never happen because, you know, we all need a reason to die.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
After all, these sicknesses, these problems, catastrophes, all
happen.
Because
they're supposed to.
Exactly. They're supposed to happen. And... these, you know, we are just like sailors in a big ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So it is very much unlogical to expect this ocean to be always calm, to be always
the way you
on the
want
safe
it to
side.
Be.
Yeah, the way you want it to be.
You just told something that caught my attention. You told that I have to know myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the thing is, if you ask me what I'm going to do to change the world, to change the people, or change anything, I'm not going to tell you that first of all, I'm going to change myself at all. I'm not going to change myself because I believe in
because
myself.
Because I don't need change.
Yeah,
I'm
exactly.
good the way I am.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but the thing is, I want to know myself. You know, for example, when you reach to something, when you reach, for example, I don't know, money, power, authenticity,
yeah.
and something like that, it's not that they will change you. They will make you reveal yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know yeah. what? For example, even in our religion, even in our Islamic history, we have the event of Ashura, which was a big change to the world,
yeah,
not only to Islamic,
actually.
You know, yeah, not only to Islamic nations, but also to the world. It was
to
something
human
really
history.
Exceptional. Why? Why do you think it was a big change that changed the whole history of Islam, of human being, of the relation of God and human? Why? What is your opinion about this?
Well, I would say that Imam Hussein alayhi salam started this journey. He wanted to make everything more clear for human beings.
Exactly.
He wanted us to come to a closer definition of the truth.
Of the truth. Of the truth of, you know, our religion even.
Mm-hmm.
Our fitrat, our, you know, our true self.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I think the most important part of this event was that all the people revealed themselves. You know, they just knew that deep in their heart, for example, most of the people didn't support Imam Hussein because they weren't actually believing in what they were saying.
Because, you know, sometimes saying, actually most of the times, saying is pretty much easier than acting.
Than doing, yeah. I do agree with that one. But the thing I'm trying to tell you is that changing the world is not something that you cannot reach. It's something achievable. It's something that you can have in your own hands. Because we have many people, no matter what age they are or something, they just change the world. But the thing is, first of all, you have to know yourself. You have to know mm-hmm. your goals. And you have to know the true situation.
Yeah.
If you don't know where you are, if you don't know whether you are the supporter of bad things or good things or evil or angel, you cannot just change anything.
I usually say to everyone that when they start nagging about the economical condition or the different problems and dilemmas that we have in
mm-hmm.
social system.
Of even our cultural
Yeah, but
matters.
For different sort of things.
Okay.
I always say that, okay, try to correct your problems and then expect other people to change themselves. Whatever you expect the society to be like,
mm-hmm.
you have to start it from yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You see, there is a larger scale and there is this a smaller scale.
Exactly.
There is this part that belongs to a larger society. That small ingredient would make many changes if it starts to change itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean that as a single person, I have this responsibility to change myself and then expect the entire world to change. So if I have this dream that, okay, I would love
change
to change the world, start it from yourself.
Mm-hmm.
If you think that you would love the other people to be kind, then start it from yourself. Try to practice kindness yourself.
Mm-hmm.
If you wish to be, I don't know, a scholar person, then start reading, start going through too much of research in order to be one.
But the thing is, the fear of starting something always makes us to finish this.
Yeah.
You know, for example, your dream is to change the world. And you know, you accept that you have to change yourself first. But the fear of the first step that you have to go through.
Overcoming yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Of overcoming yourself in this road will stop you.
Yeah, exactly.
In a way. But at last, I want to tell you that I'm from youth generation. And I don't want to be like cliche or something, but the thing is, I'd like to be a change in the world. I want to change something. I want to be someone, you know?
Okay, everyone would love that.
Yeah,
but you have to do a lot of hard work.
Exactly. I just accept it, and I wish I can do that.
Yes,
and
I know you can do that.
I don't want this mindset, which, for example, other people that you have to start from a little thing or something like that. Stop me.
And just to wrap it up, I would say that there was a beautiful poem I remember once I read when I was so young.
Oh, my gosh.
It was very beautiful. It said that at the end of the life, we're not going to be judged by the amount of money we've made, by the number of houses we've achieved, mm-hmm. by the number of whatever goodness that we have achieved, but we're going to be judged with our hearts.
Nice.
That's the same thing that would happen in the day of judgment. So God is not going to ask us about the amount of money we have made,
exactly.
or the amount of cars we've bought or whatever that is materialistic. He would rather ask us about our heart. Mm-hmm. It is our heart that is going to be judged. The amount of kindness you shared with other people, the amount of happiness you've brought to other hearts, and so on and so forth.
And you have to think big. You have to dream big.
Yeah.
And you have to
think outside the box, but do not go too far, because it's going to change into a hallucination,
exactly.
and then it's not going to be real.
You'll be like depressed. Okay, I'm not going to
do exactly.
that.
Depression is another side effect of thinking
exactly.
too big. So, again, moderation would do wonders. Thank you for listening. This was all the time we had for today's episode.
I hope you enjoyed, and be the change you want to see in the world.
Exactly.
I tell you, farewell.
Farewell, and
assalamu alaikum
wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight. Atrocities and wrongs suffered by indigenous peoples around the world have been put under the spotlight as a result of the death of Britain's Queen Elizabeth II. We have taken a look at the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The Reuters news agency has covered this story. When newly elected Indigenous Australian parliamentarian Lydia Thorpe took her oath of office last month, she raised her fist above her head in protest and labelled Queen Elizabeth II a colonising queen. It was like kneeling to the murderer, the Green senator told the Reuters news agency this week. I had to swear my allegiance to a colonising power that had caused so much harm to our people. The death of Queen Elizabeth II has led First Nation peoples from Canada to Australia and former colonies in the Caribbean islands to speak about their pain and their marginalisation, as well as renewing calls for the removal of the monarchy as head of state in some countries. The accession of King Charles III comes amid a rise in anti-colonialism fueled by a growing awareness of historical atrocities and a greater recognition of Indigenous culture and knowledge. There's rising popular consciousness around injustices around the world, what's carried out in the name of one's own nation for the exploitation of Indigenous peoples, said Weldon Coburn, an Indigenous Anishinaabe professor at the University of Ottawa in Canada. He added, almost overlapping with Queen Elizabeth's reign from the 1950s, you also see resistance movements emerging. Calls are growing in some Caribbean countries for reparation payments and an apology for slavery, while Canadian Indigenous leaders want the British monarchy to act on a swathe of historical injustices. Australia is on a path to give Aboriginal people a formal voice on Indigenous matters in Parliament. But Thorpe contrasted the government's decision to hold a day of mourning for the Queen with the historical neglect of Indigenous Australians. It is just another nail in the coffin in terms of how we feel and how we are treated as First Nations people, she said. It's like we never existed. The changing demographic in Commonwealth nations and accusations of racism in the royal family following the exit of Prince Harry and Meghan has led to more questions about the need for a distant monarch as head of state. A decision by Barbados to ditch the Queen Elizabeth II as head of state in November of 2021 was seen as a boost for the Republican cause and has been echoed in other Caribbean nations such as Jamaica and Bahamas. Opinion polls in Australia, New Zealand, Canada have all pointed to a growing view that they should end ties to the British monarchy with the death of Queen Elizabeth II. Even though this is unlikely anytime soon in countries like Canada. In New Zealand, Indigenous Maori people account for about 17% of the country's 5 million population. They are well represented in Parliament. Maori has been made an official language of New Zealand, and the history of British colonisation is taught in public schools. Maoris are also overrepresented in prisons and state care in New Zealand, and the community remains the country's poorest section of the population. If we can't address the negativity and impact of colonization now, then when? Do we wait for Prince William or Prince William's children? Asked Maori Party co-leader Debbie Ngarewa-Packer, who supports abolishing the monarchy and a New Zealand head of state. No one taking that role, king or queen, princess or prince, is unaware of the damage of colonization to us as Indigenous peoples, she said. New Zealand's Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern has said she expects New Zealand to become a republic eventually, but not anytime soon. Australia's Labour Prime Minister Anthony Albanese, who openly favours a republic, has asked a minister with making this happen. But any change would require a referendum in Australia and is only expected if the government wins a second term in office. In Canada, polls suggest about half of all people believe the country should end ties to the British monarchy with the death of Queen Elizabeth II. Indigenous peoples of Canada account for less than 5% of Canada's population of about 38 million people. And they suffer from higher levels of poverty, unemployment, and a lower life expectancy than other sections of the Canadian population. Turkey's Anadolu news agency has taken a look at opposition to Britain's monarchy within the population of Britain itself. Turkey's Anadolu news agency has covered the story from this angle. The controversy over the right to protest in the United Kingdom has come under the spotlight since the death of Queen Elizabeth II, as British police's handling of anti-monarchy protests has been criticised. The controversy came amid the shockwave caused by the death of Queen Elizabeth II last week after her 70-year-long reign. British police arrested a woman in Edinburgh for holding an anti-monarchy sign reading "Not My King," targeting the new monarch, King Charles III, according to local media reports. A protester who shouted and called Prince Andrew, who was the centre of attention after being forced by Buckingham Palace to resign from all of his public roles over a scandal involving Jeffrey Epstein, a sick old man, was the first to face arrest. The incident took place during the procession that took Queen Elizabeth II's coffin from the Palace of Holyrood House to St Giles Cathedral, and a 22-year-old man who was arrested after being manhandled and shoved by some public members, and a video of it has been largely circulated over social media. In a separate incident, a barrister was warned in London by police that a placard saying "Not my king" would see him arrested. The barrister was holding an empty placard. The reaction to the arrest has mounted on social media almost immediately after they took place, with many human rights activists joining. The campaign group Republic has written to police forces in Britain to raise concerns about the latest arrests and notice that it expects protests ahead of the coronation to be allowed to go ahead peacefully. Civil liberties groups and MPs have also expressed alarm.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech on IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Ayatollah Javadi Amali. Please stay tuned.
Imam
As-Sadiq alayhi salam taught Zurara to recite the supplication of enlightenment during the age of occultation of Imam al-Mahdi, starting with the phrase, "O Allah, make me recognize you, because if you do not make me recognize you, I will not recognize your messenger." This dua is based on knowledge, and the content of this dua is the best criterion to distinguish between two events of Al-Ghadir and Al-Saqifa. There was a decision made in both occasions of Al-Ghadir and Al-Saqifa. But the main essential difference is whether the leader of the Ummah is selected as the representative of the people or the successor to the Prophet of Allah.
اگر رهبر مردم جانشین پیغمبر است پیغمبر وکیل مردم است یا خلیفۃ الله است
If the leader of the Ummah is the successor of the Prophet, then the question is the Prophet of Allah the representative of the people or the vicegerent of Allah? Thus, if you do not truly recognize Allah and His Messenger